America's dads are fighting, and Speaker Johnson is the home wrecker. Welcome to Gay Pride Month, America.
It has been pretty gay. The whole thing's been pretty gay. Welcome to Human Reaction. I am Kyle Mack. This is David Rand. We're out Joe today, but we're here to sift through all the BS that's been going on with one of the most chaotic days on Twitter yesterday. Because Twitter is the news.
Yeah, so this is going to be a banger of a show. Now, we've been crushing it lately. The algorithm's been on our side. And then I did what I usually do, which is I saw something in the news cycle that I needed to talk about. And the algorithm does not like that particular country or people when you talk about them. It has been shit ever since. It's terrible.
The algorithm doesn't like David's topics.
It does not. I mean, look at me. I look like the guy the algorithm wants to suppress. So if you don't like that, if you're on YouTube, like and comment on this podcast. It really helps us grow the show and get us to more viewers. And if you're on Spotify, make sure you give us a little ranking there. Give us those 5 stars. We need every star you can give. So thanks so much for watching. Roll the thing.
So obviously we're talking about the Elon Trump, the big, beautiful breakup that's been happening. My favorite tweet came from Autism Capital, which was this year. It's Trump looking at Mark Zuckerberg saying, "You're Elon now. Your name is Elon now.
It's just Mark Zuckerberg looking robotic at him. It's just so perfect.
Another one that I saw circulating a lot was this. It's Trump as Stalin sitting next to Elon Musk, and then all of a sudden him just disappearing in the next photo. But yeah,
the Mean Girls fight is on. Mm-hmm. That is what happened. And now you might say this is just, you know, it's just internet drama, blah 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 blah. This is on the cover of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Like, this is something that the liberals have been praying for forever.
Since before the election, they've been praying for
this.
They've been trying to, like, the egos are too big. I guess they were right. The egos were too big.
There's no way these two people could possibly collaborate together long term.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, you know, so we've kind of talked about this, that there's been a bit of a schism on the lead up to this.
Sure.
With the big, beautiful bill that's been going on. Mm-hmm. Now, it has a lot of people speculating a lot of different ways. It's like, maybe it is just a policy dispute. Maybe it's Elon and a ketamine downfall going on right now.
Could be.
Maybe
be
it's
Trump.
All one big theatrical play.
Well, I mean, Trump 1.0, one of the biggest criticisms is that at the end of the day, what Trump tends to do is some of his best allies he hurts, and then he elevates his enemies. Mm-hmm. And it kind of feels like that way for some people. Like, and now there's like this big, like, you got to choose whose house are you going to stay at all the weekends? Is it going to be Trump or Elon's? As if that's what we got to decide.
This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with 2 V's and 2 P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
Remember the good old days when they were having sleepovers, sneaking out ice cream from out underneath RFK's nose?
Yeah, like, you just see them just kicking their legs on the bed, you know, belly down, eating ice cream. So like, so how many baby mamas you got? And blah, 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 blah.
I did see the Democratic Party, like the actual Democratic Party's Twitter account, tweeted out this like 15-second video that's like this like heartwarming music with Elon and Trump like next to each other, just like these like small, short little clips of them being bros together. It's kind of like, I feel like the Democratic Party is like upping their Twitter game a little bit, which is interesting to see.
Well, you saw they said release the Epstein files. Well, that was funny.
Yes,
that was
we will get into that, because Epstein has become a big core contention in this. So let's talk about this. So there's the schism. Trump did address it yesterday morning.
Yeah, and the little bit more context
went into
too.
A Twitter feud. Yeah,
right. We covered last week how Elon had some criticisms of the BBB, the big, beautiful bill, on spending grounds. He said it wipes out the Doge cuts without ever codifying the Doge cuts and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Although there's, we'll dig into eventually why some of that can't happen in the bill, but yeah, should have happened earlier, obviously. But then Trump was asked about it in the Oval Office, and this is what he had to say.
The criticism that I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen, regarding Elon Musk and your big, beautiful bill, what's your reaction to that? Do you think it in any way hurts passage in the Senate, which, of course, what is you're seeking?
Well, look, you know, I've always liked Elon, and I was very surprised. You saw the words he had for me, the words are for, and he hasn't said anything about me that's bad. I'd rather have him criticize me than the bill, because the bill is incredible. It's the biggest cut in the history of our country. We've never cut. It's about $1.6 trillion in cuts. It's the biggest tax cut. Tax, you would say, people's taxes will go way down. But it's the biggest tax cut in history. It's we are doing things in that bill that are unbelievable. And when you look at what we're doing for small businesses, for people, for middle-income people, all of the things that we're doing, nobody's ever seen anything like it. And, you know, Elon's upset because we took the EV mandate, and, you know, which was a lot of money for electric vehicles. And, you know, they're having a hard time, the electric vehicles, and they want us to pay billions of dollars in subsidy. And, you know, Elon knew this from the beginning. He knew it for a long time ago. That's been in there. That's been, I would say, J.D., that hasn't changed. That's been right from the beginning. Mr. Secretary, that hasn't changed at all, right from the beginning. But I know that it disturbed him. He wanted, and rightfully, you know, he recommended somebody from that he, I guess, knew very well. I'm sure he respected him, but to run NASA, and I didn't think it was appropriate. And he happened to be a Democrat, like totally Democrat. And I say, you know, look, we won. We get certain privileges, and one of the privileges, we don't have to appoint a Democrat. NASA is very important. We have great people. General Kane is going to be picking somebody.
We can probably pause it there, but
yeah, so I think the first statement's the most interesting. Mm-hmm. I'd rather he criticize me than the bill. What does that mean? Like, it's like Elon is engaging in a criticism of Speaker Johnson, and Trump is like, I'd rather you criticize me. What? Mm-hmm. That's such a strange statement.
Yeah. There's an interesting gamesmanship that's happening around all of this.
I think that's where your mind goes.
I think there's an interesting game that's being played right now.
Yeah, I mean, the criticizing of the bill is regular discourse. That's what we do as in a republic. Mm-hmm. Is we say I don't like certain aspects of this legislation or the overall play that Congress is making. Right. I mean, so much of this would be way different if rescission was in the CR. Right. Mm-hmm. And all these Doge cuts were being implemented to actually cut the government rather than just cutting programs that are now just holding in bank accounts large sums of money that the executive can go spend on a new rebranded program that does exactly the same thing, either in this administration or the next. So, like, if it's strange to me that, you know, we have this strange dialogue that is Trump versus Elon personal grudge match. And this, after this, it gets into that, right? Mm-hmm. We'll dive into that. And then there's the BBB and how the Senate should react to it and what they should do with it. And then there's like, what has Congress done so far? Mm-hmm. That is the backdrop to all of this. And all these things are kind of getting confused. And by separating them, I think the picture becomes a lot clearer.
I think that's true. I think you start to see the gamesmanship. I think you start to see the cogs and how they're moving right now. Mm. You kind of see... It is interesting too, like even just the NASA thing here. Because Elon went through like a rampage of quote tweeting a bunch of like old stuff, and one of the things he quote tweeted was Trump's endorsement of this NASA guy too. so it's just kind of, you know, it's there's interesting like gamesmanship that's being played here on the Twitter feud, I think. And it goes down to like, because the Elon's core criticism of this bill is one that we're lacking the Doge rescissions, but just in general, like there are a lot of tax or like there's a lot of spending cuts that are existing in this bill. Like, I don't want to take that away. The big problem, and this is the problem that we've laid out here too, like on principle, we agree. I think both of us are very much in agreement with Elon on the problems with the BBB is in particular, there's massive increase in the deficit that's going on. It's like we needed more cuts to happen. Yeah, yeah. Like 1.6 trillion wasn't enough. The 1 trillion of Medicaid and like the half a trillion in the green energy stuff. Like, I'm great. Like, all the stuff that the bill does do, I'm like, I'm down for. I like the things the bill does do.
Yeah. Well, it's like, do we need additional defense spending, right? Mm-hmm. Or should that be put into like an appropriations bill rather than a reconciliation bill?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the challenge, right? Because it's a reconciliation bill, you're very limited on what you can do with it, because a reconciliation bill only requires 51 votes in the Senate, not 60 to get cloture on debate. Because they don't want to do force a vote mm-hmm. that fails, they did it into a reconciliation vote. And with that is this dynamic where they're kind of giving the defense budget hawks everything they want, a bunch more defense spending, including the Golden Dome and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, which is probably way undervalued, right? I mean, like, some third parties have come along since the bill dropped and valued that thing at almost $1 trillion to mm-hmm. actually build. To build a defense dome over America, the size of the continental United States, much less Alaska and Hawaii, versus building one for Israel, which is the size of New Jersey, right? Think about that. Just building one for the size of Texas
would be huge.
Would be huge. Yeah. It would be an enormous expense, right? So this is probably way undervaluing it, but that's what a reconciliation does. It does not it appropriates money to the degree to which it mandates new programs. So because it's not a budget bill, it doesn't require, you can't actually change most mandatory spending, but you can mandate new spending in it. That's how insane reconciliations are, right? Mm-hmm. So when he says 1.6 trillion in cuts, what he's talking about is changes to policy in Medicare, Medicaid, and the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act Green New Deal.
Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah, yeah, which was a Green New Deal.
Which had nothing to do with inflation at all.
According to John Kerry, actually had nothing to do with inflation. It was just a green jobs bill and a big corporate giveaway. That they can only do these changes on the margin to policy. And then, you know, of course, some of those changes are relatively delayed for political purposes. And then all these tax cuts are also temporary. But then you also have this interesting wrinkle that the CBO is projecting 2.4 to 2.6 trillion to the national deficit over 10 years, assuming a 2% growth rate in the economy. Now, what allows the bill to budget in part are two major variables. One, the White House claims when it's saying this, and I did have a link to it, Kyle, mm-hmm. if you just want to bring it up, just yeah. show the viewers, is that they are assuming a 3.2% average growth in the economy. Mm-hmm. To 5.2 by 2029. That's what makes their numbers balance, assuming a huge growth rate in the economy. Now, we haven't bridged 3% in quite some time. We haven't bridged 4% since the 1990s.
Yeah.
So that means a deregulation pathway that we have not seen from the Trump administration so far, right? I mean, they did get pretty good numbers, they're 1.0, but they did not get to 5.2. So what are they going to do that would be that deregulatory? And how much tariffs are a headwind on that growth? Because I'm not exactly sure they're going to get all these businesses moving in by 2029 to do manufacturing, and that's going to show up in the GDP numbers. Much less that they count in their GDP numbers, because GDP includes government spending. That what they're going to do is they're counting tariffs in mm-hmm. in that.
Which tariffs are going to be kind of fickle, because a lot of them are being used as the trade leverage. Like, I think that there is supposed to be a 10% baseline tariff across the board that's going to happen. But also, if you're moving in a bunch of manufacturing into the United States, then in theory, tariff revenue will start to go down. So, like, it's one of those things where you can kind of calculate with current numbers right now, but like, those numbers are going to shift over time. Especially, it's hard to really fully calculate before we've had the 90-day negotiation period that we've been going into as well.
Right.
And I suspect the trade negotiation stuff's going to be a continued conversation even beyond those 90 days for quite some time as well.
Definitely.
So it's hard to, but like, again, this does kind of go into the Bessent plan here of like, they were talking about 3% growth. They're talking about deregulation, especially in the energy industry, like Interior Secretary, what's his name from North Dakota, has been talking about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
There's been some good interviews with him. Burgum. Yeah. There's been some good interviews with him talking about this as well. So it's one of those things where there's a lot of this, like, I see the pieces. It's a matter of, do all the pieces come together in any reasonable fashion? That's the question.
And the question is whether or not it's enough to do just with the executive. Do you need a congressional bill to get the kind of growth that you're looking at? And then second to that, and this is in the White House's favor. The CBO has a rule that says that you have to assume the baseline on current law. Mm-hmm. So the current law, if this bill doesn't pass, is the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act revenue comes back in, right? And so that's one of the reasons why this is so high. Now the Senate Republicans have lots of other criticisms we'll dig into of the bill. That's more of the larger picture, but also it does increase the debt ceiling by $5 trillion. Mm-hmm. So there's something.
I think it's the exact number. I think it's 4.8.
I'm rounding. Yeah. Give me a break here.
I'm being specific.
But yeah, exactly.
I'm being a little autistic. I'm like Elon. I'm spurgy sometimes.
But yeah, exactly. So because it increases the debt ceiling, they're like, well, this is showing the hand of what you're actually doing. You're actually not caring about the deficit. You're removing our leverage for forcing budget reform. Therefore, you know, you're not actually intending on cutting spending.
One of the things, and this kind of goes into what you were asking about with the I wish that he'd criticize me, not the bill. Mm-hmm. Trump's, and this plays into my larger theory of what is going on that we'll kind of piece out throughout the episode is. Trump doesn't have a lot of leverage right now in this whole grand scheme of things. Like, Trump needs the Tax Cuts and Job Act taxes to become permanent. Because otherwise, we're seeing a massive tax increase across the board on all American citizens after this. Mm-hmm. And that cannot be seen as a loss. Like, it doesn't matter if it's like the Democrats made it happen. Like, Trump is the president. Like, that has to go through. So there's a lot of... Like, he lacks the leverage to maybe make a lot of the necessary cuts that I think even Donald Trump would want to make. Mm-hmm. That's like a very important piece in all of this right now.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a theory.
I don't think just being like the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act should just be in its own separate bill and it can just get passed through Congress. Like I don't think that's politically feasible. Like,
well, also,
it needs to be lumped in with a bunch of stuff in order for this to go through. That's like the unfortunate political reality.
Yeah. I mean, it's also the vehicle in which they get the other tax cuts they want that are specifically targeted for more of the middle class too. And that's the
tax on tips, like all of that
auto
stuff,
loan,
right?
Stuff like that.
Yeah. The ones that are temporary, hopefully become permanent in the future, that type of stuff.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And that's the whole idea of leverage. Now, what that will continue to do is continue to have CBO forecasts that increase the deficit because they have to assume, because of the rules that current laws persist, that this law doesn't pass as their baseline. I mean, I'm not exactly sure how you can.
Yeah, because like some of us in the backdrop, there's like a very Elon principled position versus Trump pragmatic position that is like at the basis of this feud there, you know, and some of that is like the current political realities of the time. And then trying to probably find some sort of a common ground between those two realities. I think that's kind of a larger piece of the picture here. Let's get into actually the
with the EV cuts.
Yeah, the EV cuts.
So he says that that Elon's actually really mad because they're repealing the EV stuff. Is that true? Well, I mean, Elon has been in favor of EV credits in the past. Like, for example, I remember back in the, 2013, 14, 15, he was in big favor of this because we have to tackle climate change and all those arguments Elon was into, right?
He was a liberal hero because of it.
Yeah. And then he was saying stuff like, and this is one of his better arguments for it, is that because you burn fossil fuels, you get like this sink that you can then put your waste, which is the air that everyone breathes. Therefore, that's like a subsidy. And so therefore his stuff doesn't have that subsidy quite like that because you're not liable for the things you put into the air. Ignoring the fact that to mine the lithium batteries also requires lots of things being put into the air that you're getting a subsidy on, Elon. That argument really doesn't follow, but at least since when was this CNN article? 2021, he's been in favor of ending the EV cuts, right? EV efforts,
and like across the board, like it's not just like give me special treatment. Like as long as everybody's playing a fair game, that's been kind of his argument.
And also noting that this bill does do him huge favors, of which the left will never give him credit for on criticizing, right? But Yeah. And then
it is funny too, because like, so Elon in part, we're going to get into a bunch of Elon's tweets and kind of the timeline here. But one of the things that he did was that he was quote tweeting a lot of things that other people were always saying.
Yeah.
And this one in particular is Trump talking about Elon.
Before the breakup. This is when they're still in their bromance era.
People, we're lucky to have, I have to tell you, I want to thank you all. And Elon, I want to thank you. I know you've been through a lot with this horrible situation that happens.
I'm running the cause. That's right.
Saving America.
It's very unfair. What he is a patriot. He's a man that I can tell you, he's a friend of mine. He's become a friend of mine. He supported me in the election. That's when I got to know him, really. I knew him a little bit from the first term, but not much. But he's a patriot more than anything else. He's never think of it. He has never asked me for a thing. He could have. I always say, I wonder if he's ever going to ask me for something. And that's always subject to change. And if it does change, I'll let you know about it. But Elon has never asked me for a thing. I mean, I got rid of the electric car mandate. I have no idea how that affects him, but possibly not good. I don't know. But he's never asked me for a thing. And I think that's an amazing tribute.
There you go. So Trump himself admits that, you know, this whole, that the EV mandate isn't why, you know, Elon is mad about the BBB, right?
And that's ultimately, at least in the past, yes. Yeah. Now, there were some like reports that I saw that were like, people among the Trump administration say that there was a fight over the EV mandate behind closed doors. It's one of those things where it's like, that's just like scuttlebutt, though. Like, there's a lot of scuttlebutt that's been happening around with, like, there's a lot of scuttlebutt of, like, there's a lot of drama that a lot of the political reporters have been posting that we have there's no actual confirmation that exists there. Like, to the point where I'm like, I don't know if I want to even, like, bring them up. Some of them are kind of funny.
Yeah, they are.
But, like, things revolving around the reason why Elon had the black eye last week and, like, stuff like that. So...
We can dig into it. I'm good with that. But okay. So what really happened, and to kind of get into the feud itself, is after Trump that I was asked that. That's kind of in the context of the criticisms on the report that we did last week on the BBB with Elon reacting against it as he's leaving the administration full time. Is he still technically a government employee too? We haven't heard anything that he's like no longer.
No. He's
up on his part-time thing, right? The amount of days he can work in a year, but it's not like he's like losing his.
Yeah. Last week, because we had covered it last week, was like the send-off of Elon was like I'm out of my time or whatever.
Yeah.
So like I'm assuming he's just no longer an SGE anymore.
Okay.
But he's still gonna like fulfill an advisory role for Doge here and there. Like he'll still give his wisdom for it and things like that.
Got it.
But I think that he's no longer technically an employee or they're letting it run out or whatever needs to be done. So
in that he then, you know, when it got to the Senate, Rand Paul and other Senate Republicans started to criticize the bill and say like, hey, well, this is kind of like this has some major problems. Trump goes after Rand Paul specifically, calls him a grandstander, calls him all these things. And really, I mean, Elon kind of backs up Rand Paul's position, says, no, guys, this does have some major problems. So then he starts, Elon starts tweeting, you know, his beefs with the BBB, including these kind of tweets like this one where he's pointing to Speaker Johnson being a budget hawk in 2018.
Yeah, like Speaker Johnson says, at some point, Congress has to stop this endless cycle of out-of-control deficit spending. And Elon's like, I super agree with this guy. But that was kind of before things started really escalating. Those were the types of tweets that he was using. He was pulling up old Trump clips, old Trump tweets, old Speaker Johnson tweets, old like various senator tweets and things like that. And he was just being like, I agree with him back 4 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever.
Classic technique, right? I mean, because this exposes the typical Republican grift, which is you campaign as a libertarian, then you govern like a statist, big government spender.
But then Trump started throwing a few jabs towards Elon on truth. He spoke his truth. It started out with saying Elon was wearing thin, in quotes. I asked him to leave. I took away his EV mandate that forced everyone to buy electric cars and nobody else wanted. That he knew for months I was going to do. And he just went crazy. The easiest way to save money in our budget billions and billions of dollars is to terminate Elon's governmental subsidies and contracts. I was always surprised that Biden didn't do it. It's very playful. I don't mind Elon turning against me, but he should have done so months ago. This is one of the greatest bills ever presented to Congress. It's a record cut in expenses, $1.6 trillion, and the biggest tax cut ever given. If this bill doesn't pass, there will be a 68% tax increase and things far worse than that. I didn't create this mess. I'm just here to fix it. This puts our country on a path of greatness. Make America great again. So those were the only three tweets that or truths that Trump put out.
And of course, Elon
put out hundreds.
He's
probably
a volume man. He's about volume.
These are very well crafted. Let's all get around the Oval Office guys and make this tweet where Elon is just like fire, 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 machine gun.
And one thing to note before we go on too, and I have to note this because I just think it's interesting. Like signal of our times. Mm-hmm. You have two billionaires with their own social media platforms subtweeting each other, sub-messaging each other, right? I mean, like, how crazy is that? That we just, I mean, it's like a cyberpunk reality sort of thing where you have billionaires with social media platforms using them to get out their message about the other person or about the other person's bill. And this is, and obviously this is where
it is funny because they both own those platforms.
Right, like, right. There's an aesthetic to that that is just crazy.
Well, it's sort of like when the China trade war started going on, you had the Chinese like U.S. embassy tweeting out all these like memes on Donald Trump. And we live in such a fantastic
time.
Take a breath from whatever you're angry about in the political news and just enjoy it. Like, don't take yourself too seriously. These are like very fun times right now. I pulled up a lot of what I thought was maybe the most interesting tweets in all of this. There was a lot of volume. I probably missed a lot of important ones in the Elon story. But one of these was actually a response to Laura Loomer, where she was just kind of talking about it's heating up. Elon had tweeted, without me, Trump would have lost the election. Dems would control the House and the Republicans would be 51-49 in the Senate. Such ingratitude. He's talking to Trump. Mm-hmm. Laura Loomer had tweeted out, a thing about this, just kind of reporting on it.
Yeah.
And Elon responded under here saying, and some food for thought as they ponder the question. Trump has 3.5 years left as president, but I'll be around for 40 plus years.
And this is like her saying, you got to choose between your parents divorcing, sort of,
This is Elon straight up saying, like, I'm the new George Soros. I'm going to be the new George Soros.
Right. And this is contrary to what we reported last week, where he's kind of like, I don't know, I might be out of political spending for now. Mm-hmm. You know, but he's also saying, like, I'm going to be around for a minute. Mm-hmm. So watch out. And I got a lot of money.
And this is the Elon is going to be throwing a lot of bombs in from the sidelines. And there's a lot of people up for re-election in the midterms. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the signal that he's throwing out here right now of being like, Trump's not going to be like bludgeoning you guys for your ridiculous deficit spending, but I sure will from the outside here. Yes. And I will be in your states. Like, this is the type of threat that he's laying out right now. Mm.
He also threatened, I don't think we have a tweet of it, but he also threatened to start a new political party.
Yes, he put out a poll saying, should there be a new political party formed that that caters to the 80% in the middle?
Yeah.
And it was funny because it was like 80% yes. So it was like a solid 80%.
and then the LP, the Mises Caucus people were like, you can just take over the LP if you want.
I did see Angela McArdle from the Libertarian Party saying, like, because they notoriously took over the Libertarian Party, saying, like, you can just take over things. like, it's actually not that hard. then things started to escalate. And this is where I'm sure anybody that exists on the internet probably saw this. Time to drop the really big bomb. Donald Trump is in the Epstein files. That is the real reason they have not been made public. Have a nice day, DJT.
That got a 192 million views. Holy cow.
And then he said, mark this post for the future. The truth will come out.
Now, a lot of people are reading that means scorched earth. That means going after something. He's accusing him of being a pedo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, there was a divorce and he was like, you're a pedophile. And now they're supposed to have a call today to make it all up. You know, it's very curious. It's very
now. Curious. I mean,
so, and then again, Elon Musk tweeting out, here's videos of...
attention.
Here, I'll turn the volume down, but it's Trump at parties in 1992 in Palm Beach, Florida.
A lot of blondes.
Yeah, a lot of... I'll skip ahead, but eventually they bring in... Jeffrey Epstein comes in. This is a decade before he was guilty on his first charges. Look at her back there. You know, they're talking. So there's these types of dynamics
more
that are locker happening
room
on
talk.
Here. You have the Democrats tweeting out, kill the bill and release the Epstein files. It's like, I'm glad you guys are on board with this. It's nice. I'm glad we can all agree with this.
Now they want the Epstein files out. Could you imagine being Hillary Clinton while looking at that tweet? like, wait a minute.
Wait, what happened?
They've lost control of the Democrats.
There's WikiLeaks. I actually didn't see this one, Dave. You put this one in the notes.
This is him promising to release the Epstein files.
So we have Donald Trump.
Would you declassify the 9/11 files?
Yeah.
Would you declassify JFK files?
Yeah. I did a lot of it.
Would you declassify the Epstein files?
Yeah, I would.
All right.
I guess I would. I think that less so because, you know, you don't know. You don't want to affect people's lives if it's phony stuff in there because there's a lot of phony stuff with that whole world. But I think I would.
What's the phony stuff, Donald?
Oh, well, I think I understand what he's saying right there is there's a lot of shenanigans that happen. A lot of people get roped into things that,
Right. There's a lot.
Because that's the thing is like the Epstein quote unquote quiet client list and stuff like that is like, it's a phone book. Like it's just, there's a bunch of people in there that it's like, there's no actual evidence that it's just like, he had people's contact information and then people are using that to be like, oh, they're on the thing.
And that's partially covering his own ass a little bit because he was associated with Epstein somewhat. But what people really mean by the Epstein files is they want some person who is, you know, specialized in this area to go through the videotape of his multiple mansions and the guests that he had there and say, here's the people who engage in intercourse with underage prostitutes. That's what they want. That's what they mean by the Epstein files. And
apparently Pam Bondi has said that they now have like 10,000 hours worth of footage of Jeffrey Epstein engaging in acts himself. It was like, she's just made this public, like, I don't know, 2 weeks ago or something like that. So,
but
it's one of those things where we still,
everyone supposes it's a compromat operation and therefore they want to know who were the targets of that compromat and who gave into it. And then, you know, on whose behalf was that done, right? That's what people mean by that. It's a shorthand. The Epstein files is a meme.
Yeah.
It's a compression of a very specific ask, which is you put a lady in jail and a man killed himself.
For trafficking.
For who?
Right? Like, yeah, who was
who
being
did they traffic to? And on behalf of what state actor was it done?
Mm-hmm. Because like it's very... It very much appears from all the evidence that we have, just from the sleuthing of decades,
yes,
that there are state actors involved in this. And it's just like, which state actors? Who is being involved?
Was it
like,
the CIA?
Which mafia groups?
Was it that other one for that one place that we can't mention? Otherwise, YouTube will suppress us. That is a
Britain.
That's a question. Yeah, Britain, and France. I'm sure that's what it was.
Britain is one of the two major ones that I think is there.
But you might, and then the phone book version of the Epstein files, who else might come out with it in the files, if it's a phone book, would be Elon himself.
Well, and that's kind of the funny thing here, too, is so like I saw this tweet. Somebody was like, both sides are making good points. I'd like to see a healthy debate continue. And then it's on a tweet of Elon with Ghislaine Maxwell, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't really know Elon's Epstein connection. Is it deeper than just being
he was involved
in
a subpoena in some country involving Epstein at some point? Whitney Webb talks about this. I don't remember all the fine details of it. It's a thing where it's like, I remember this being talked about a while ago. And Elon himself he says that this picture is that she just bombarded him at a party. Like she just kind of like came up and was like, hey, let's take a picture, you know? And it's like, that could very much be it too.
I mean, he doesn't look like he's friendly with her in this picture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not exactly.
But this is actually kind of like what Elon was saying what Trump was saying in that video is like, you want to make sure that people aren't wrongfully getting caught up in this messy world is like, this is kind of the thing is that this is like a very incestuous world that they're all a part of, where there's a lot of people that very well could just like could be very innocent in this whole thing, but they took some meetings or whatever,
right.
and it becomes like, oh, like target that person, right? Like that's the kind of dangers on the Epstein, 100%. Like a witch hunt.
That which is totally, exist, right? Totally reasonable position.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. But it is just worth noting is that both of them have ties to Epstein. Like,
yeah,
like that's kind of the important part in this. Another big piece here was that you had Ian Miles Chong, that guy. He had tweeted out this president versus Elon. Who wins? My money's on Elon. Trump should be impeached and J.D. Vance should replace him. This is, you know, America First Ian Miles Chong, who's from Malaysia.
Yeah.
And Elon said, yes.
That's such a low effort tweet, too.
So it's like, is he implying that Trump should be impeached?
Yeah.
Is that what's, that, is like, that
what
or
implying? Is he saying that he will win?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the.
Is that your money belongs with Elon?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another spike, right? That feels a lot like the Epstein one where it's like, this is a real war and is what they're trying to implement with that.
Well, and this is where I want to start getting, like, all of my group chats were on fire yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, like, Twitter was in an uproar. All my Twitter DMs, my like general group chats with friends and things like that. And everybody's just like, oh my God, new Elon tweet. You know, like that's what's going on here. And I very early on in all of this believed, and I still do believe at this point, I think that this is, to me, the top theory that I have in my mind of what's going on, is that this is all theater.
Maybe.
That this thing is theater. Trump, like I said in the beginning, Trump's hands are tied. He is kind of stuck having to defend the bill. Like, there's good things in the bill that he needs to champion. It's a political failure if he loses this thing. His hands are tied. Elon, on the other hand, needs to find a way to distance himself from Trump in some degree in his exit from Doge. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be some smoke and mirrors that need to be done with that. And he needs to be the guy throwing the bombs from the outside, being like, I'm the new George Soros. I'm coming after you in the midterms, people.
Yeah.
Like, and throwing bombs and making sure that the bill comes clean. Mm. Trump retweeted this from Novel saying Elon's stance is principled. Trump's stance is practical. Tech needs Republicans for the present. Republicans need tech for the future. Drop the tax cuts, cut the pork, get the bill through. Which Elon retweeting that kind of shows like this is what's Elon's obviously kind of endorsing this idea. I don't like the idea of dropping the tax cuts, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What
gets through if you drop the tax cuts? What he means is just pass a clean Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Is that what Naval is saying?
I think what he's saying is ignore the tax. I think what Naval is saying is ignore the tax cuts and just start cutting spending.
Yeah.
Well, but like the thing is, it's like, you can't just ignore that. Like this would be such a political loser for Trump to lose the tax cuts.
Yeah. 100%. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Then there's this dynamic. Actually, I think I pulled the wrong thing.
No, that's right.
Oh, this is the right thing. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but I think the frame up, an account with 184 followers has achieved de-escalation between two of the most powerful people in the world is a really funny thing, right? It's an interesting observation.
And this is why. So you have this was one of those things where I had a lot of my friends telling me that this is kind of the nail in the coffin. It's like a real beef was when Elon made this tweet. In light of the president's statement and cancellation of my government contracts, SpaceX will begin decommissioning its Dragon spacecraft immediately. Right. And this was the thing that I was saying kind of behind closed doors was like, he's not going to decommission Dragon. That's not going to happen. Like the government contracts are not going to be taken away from him. This is the Fugazi. Right? Well, like,
to be clear, if the government contracts are failed, that means we go back to the Russians to get us up to the ISS.
Yes.
So that's not going to happen.
Like, this is the Fugazi. This is one of the signals. I actually think the Jeffrey Epstein tweet is another one of those signals. It's like, oh, this is going to be a bombshell.
Yeah, right.
Like, right. Like, this is the thing where it's like, this is where you see, this is all the smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. And then several hours later after that, like 4 hours after the fact, you have this random account, like this guy says, with 184 followers, tweets on that. Says, this is a shame. This is a shame. This back and forth. You are both better than this. Cool off and take a step back for a couple days. And Elon says, good advice. I won't decommission Dragon. And at the time, that the screenshot was taken, it's 40 million views on the I will decommission Dragon. Oh, we're really angry at each other.
Yeah.
And then you have in the comments, because nobody like goes deeper into the comments. These ones just naturally don't get as well read.
Uh-huh.
Has 60,000 views saying it's not actually going to happen. Like, right. This is the gamesmanship that's being played here, right?
Yeah. So that does incline me to agree with the kayfabe thesis. Now, kayfabe is when wrestlers who don't actually hate each other have to pretend to hate each other in order to beef up the wrestling show. WrestleMania 21's coming up. You gotta, fighters do this, boxers do this, UFC fight. Everyone does this in order to gin up media for the fight that they're about to sell. Now, the question is, what are they trying to sell? Like, to what end? In your case, is that the end is to improve the bill because Trump's hands are tied. And by Elon being on the outside, now he's perfectly positioned to try to improve the BBB. And maybe get more spending cuts put into it. Because there are additional spending cuts that could be made. Like, for example, there are unspent COVID funds, which are policy COVID fund-enabled money that they could put in reconciliation in for. They are not reconciliation, rescission. Sorry, wrong word. R words. But not that R word. There's also additional policy you could do to be more aggressive or to front load policy changes when it comes to Medicaid or SNAP. And there's also things like the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill itself is a policy that which is a mandated spending by policy, not mandated spending by appropriation. Therefore, it could itself be that. Now, will they do that? That's a long bridge. That's a very far way to go because Republicans typically do not touch the Farm Bill. As a compromise, even as they're all say they're free markets, they love farm subsidies. So you get outside pressure, and then Elon gets what he wants, which is a separation from the Trump administration. So
for the sake of his companies, it's actually quite useful for his companies.
Well, I mean, the blue hairs are still going to be marking up Teslas until something happens. Now they're going to be like defending Teslas with a bat with nails put in it.
Elon had the spurt, but he hates Trump, so I guess I can buy a Tesla now. there's going to be a lot of that's going on. Although that being said, I would not be surprised. Now, I'm somebody that likes to have strong opinions loosely held. I'm a trader. That's kind of the norm for traders. I think that it's quite likely what we end up seeing is the Big Beautiful Bill gets signed on Trump's desk July 4th with Elon being in the Oval Office with Trump during that time.
Mark it down, ladies and gentlemen. That's the prediction.
That is the prediction. So we have a month of Big Beautiful Bill stuff. And I actually want to play a clip here from Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly had a she had a beef with Trump back in the 2016 election. There was the when she was the debate moderator for the Republican debate. And it was the
very unfair question, Megan.
Only Rosie O'Donnell. That line. And then in the aftermath, I don't know. Megyn Kelly just came after me. She had blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever. Right. Remember these moments?
So
remember those moments?
I forgot about the blood coming out of the whatever.
So they had this beef. And now Megyn Kelly is, big Trump supporter now at this point in time. Has a big show and everything. This is her on Sean Ryan a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And Sean had asked her about the former beef with Donald Trump.
And it was really crazy. So crazy, Sean, because I walked out. We agreed, we're good. And the last thing he said to me before I walked out of Trump Tower was, Megan, it's not such a good thing if they're not talking about us. And I was like, oh my God, was this whole thing for show? Was he acting the whole time?
Wow.
To generate buzz? And it was really...
That's her response after they had made amends and he had invited her over to Trump Tower to negotiate a peace deal, say.
And this kind of fits the Trump model, right, is that the hard negotiator who really takes it to people, including his own clients and the people who work for him or are subcontracting to him to get the better rate. And then
the trade deals.
He's like, but now we're good. As a businessman.
No, but it's the same thing. It's the same pattern of the art of the deal, right? Is that you kind of have this very big bully attitude and you go to war with people. And a lot of times it's like WrestleMania.
Yeah, right.
Right. It's
he's been a part of.
Which he is a professional wrestler, actually. but it's also a thing, too. This is not an uncommon Elon PR tactic also. Mm-hmm. In some ways, these two people are the most famous people for doing this type of PR tactic.
Right. Who are you thinking of when you think that he's kind of had this sort of beef with in the past that he then came around and then made good with?
Zuckerberg.
Are they cool now? Is that the
idea?
They
even like we're going to fight. Remember, yeah, like they remember were going that. To do the fight in the in
I wish
the,
that could have happened
in awesome. The Colosseum. Like yeah. they were, like Dana White was scheduling with the Italian government for a fight in the Roman Colosseum.
You tell me that was kayfabe.
I think some of it was.
Yeah.
Well, Zuckerberg is the new Elon now. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think that
happens. I think this is like a very common thing in like billionaire games in yeah. publicly traded company. I think it's a very common thing. A lot of the stuff around the Twitter times, like he was going to war with everybody.
Yeah.
Now some of those are probably justified in real anger. Some of those are probably fake.
Yeah. Right?
Or it's not fake's not the right word. It's like a Machiavellian understanding that you have to be kind of guileful. And a lot of these guys kind of understand this is part of the game. Mm-hmm. We're playing a game right now.
Right.
And it's like, it's no real harsh feelings in the long term, but like we'll go to war now, but we'll kind of laugh about it later. Like, I think that there's a lot of that type of stuff that goes on. Like, I wouldn't even be surprised if Elon and Trump had a call last night. It was like, man, you really got me good with the Epstein stuff.
Yeah, right. right.
Like, that type of
as
thing.
As they're eating ice cream on the phone.
It's hiding out from RFK.
So I think the kayfabe thing has some grounding to it. I think it's real. But I do think there's some other narratives we should talk about.
It could also just be Elon's on ketamine. Like, yeah. That's another one of the narratives.
What is
right?
that? I don't know anything about ketamine. Or why do people think he's on it? What's the case there?
He goes through these manic episodes. Like he's a very manic person.
Yeah. So he kind of has really highs and really low lows.
Yeah. Like he does these things where all of a sudden he just goes like scorched earth on Twitter sometimes, like kind of like Kanye style, right. like in a lot of ways. Speaking of,
bring it up. We got to show it.
Where do we have the tweet? Oh yeah, I got it.
So when I saw this, I was like, this has reached a whole new level of mimetic energy, this whole fight, because
Kanye West, bros, please, no, we love you both so much.
Punk emoji.
I love Jeremy Kaufman. Jeremy Kaufman down below. Finally, a voice of sanity.
Ye comes out of nowhere as the peacemaker. He's the peacemaker we need.
right. That's.
But that's and he never mentions either one. But everyone knows what he's talking about, and that kind of shows you the moment and how big it was and how effective it was. If it's kayfabe, now if it was ketamine. Or Elon's on drugs and he's high at the Oval Office. And there's like videos that people are posting of him kind of twerking out, being weird. Obviously, everyone's seen them. Him at the inauguration is a great example where he's like doing that thing, losing it next to Barron. Is a funny, you know, and so that whole theory is there. I mean, like there's a lot of. People, and I think I saw Piers Morgan. They were debating this whole thing, and in the case of the anti-Elon crowd was, well, he's on drugs, he's unreliable, and no one can trust him, and no one likes him, mm-hmm. right? And it's kind of a Mean Girls thing, but it's also, you know, I mean,
and this was the political scuttlebutt, is that he was getting into wars with like Marco Rubio and Stephen Miller.
Good.
Marco loves his wars, kind of behind the scenes in the White House. And he was just going on these like ketamine rampages and things like that. Like this is kind of the like
and scuttlebutt.
This has always been a scuttlebutt around Elon. And I don't know if it's ever actually been like super substantiated about his drug usage. It's always like a common thing where. Like I've heard this for years that he's like this like ketamine or cocaine addict, but like I always just hear people saying that. I don't know if that's real or not.
Yeah, you don't seem to do a lot of these things,
yeah.
Which is where you usually get the cocaine vibe, but I don't know. I mean, I don't have any way to call it.
One of the rumors is that part of the fights was that is that the next baby mama is Stephen Miller's wife. So I
saw that and I looked into it. And it seems like it's really just based around the fact that his wife was working for him and now left with Elon.
And now she's going to go get a nice job at SpaceX.
Yeah. I mean, but that could also be that she's just a great person to work with that he wants to employ. Just because he has
that
lots
he
of
wants
baby
to
mamas
impregnate.
Doesn't mean he wants necessarily to impregnate this woman.
But these are just like, this is the scuttlebutt stuff of all this. Right. And it is one of these things where it's like a lot of people, like I saw an analysis, somebody had sent me this analysis that was saying like the core like thing, like butting of heads between Trump and Elon is that Trump is actually like extremely guileful and Elon is not. He's much more just like blunt force. Like I'm just going to say what I want and things like that. I don't think that gives Elon enough credit for how guileful he actually kind of is. I think that he kind of likes these types of games, these like maneuvering games. I think it's how he's gotten where he is with all of his companies.
Look at the stock trading. Look at how he maneuvered X to buy it. I mean, all those things are very real. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I don't think he's a dummy on the strategic level of human psychology. No,
I don't think Trump or Elon are dummies.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't think
either of those are dummies.
A lot of these theories kind of make them that way, right?
They play into it. And that's actually a big thing is like I saw Elon even quoting out memes of people talking about him being on ketamine.
Right.
So like he plays into it as well and allows these narratives to spread.
So the narrative from to get off the ketamine thing, because we have no way of proving that either way, and that's all just speculation, is that Elon is taking the debt seriously when the average Republican voter and DC insider Republican just simply don't. Right. And that's really at the core of this. Mm-hmm. And that's from like the pro Elon side. Right. They're saying like the difference is, and this is kind of mirrors what you're saying, is that he is principled and has always been in this position, has never changed his point of view. And that's why he can't work in D.C. It's like Mr. Jones goes to Washington and then discovers they're corrupt sort of thing.
Yeah, he's oh my God, this is how the sausage is made?
Yeah, as if Elon Musk didn't know how the sausage was made before 2024.
It's like Elon just all of a sudden learned and had this realization recently.
He's a major contractor with the federal government. Yes. Come on, guys.
Yes, this is exactly.
He's like 50, right? I mean, like, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's just no way. You know, I mean.
He understands. And Elon's also somebody that's like very like, politically and philosophically well-read. He, in his early years, he got really into this stuff and kind of formed a worldview. Like, he's somebody that has, like...
Well, looking at him talk about trade.
That has an ideology.
Yeah, right? If you look at him talk about trade, he talks about trade the way somebody who has actually read Capitalism Freedom by Milton Friedman would talk about trade, right? And not, like, in the broad, I haven't actually thought about comparative advantage way, but, like, in that, no, I actually understand how global supply chains work. I run several companies who use them, right? And then I understand the theory of them in terms of general how it creates general welfare. That difference is huge. And I imagine people who have to feel like they have to choose between Elon and Trump, you're going to get the more intellectual people being like, well, obviously Elon's right here, right?
He's taking the more principled position.
Yeah.
100%. Where Trump is taking the more pragmatic, like Machiavellian position.
Yeah.
But kind of my theory is that they're both being Machiavellians here and trying to get things into a middle ground with them both being like the symbols of the two sides. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of what I think is happening right now.
Yeah.
Some other pieces of the fallout. I want to highlight the Bannon thing.
Oh,
Elon tweeted here. Bannon is peak retard.
but you got to play the Bannon clip though. It's but so good.
Exactly. So this is what Bannon had to say with Posobiec and whoever this guy is.
Know anything. He's a know-it-all. He knows some engineering. Don't get me wrong. I give a hat tip for that. But he doesn't know anything about the real world. Doge was, again, for any fanboys that still exist, while you're wrapping up in your cape tonight, understand on Doge, he didn't find any fraud. There's plenty of fraud out there. This was President Trump's first complaint. Was this all BS, right, with the Doge? The act that President Trump should be taking immediately, I think, when he threatens to take one of the big programs out of SpaceX, President Trump tonight should sign an executive order calling for the Defense Production Act to be called in SpaceX and seize SpaceX tonight before midnight. Know anything.
Man, I wish I had like a communist sound button, like the press, like, oh, da, 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 you know, like one of those USSR kind of sounds like we need to nationalize this guy's company because he
said mean things
mean
on Twitter.
Mean tweets.
Yeah. And it's important to remember, like, Bannon was an important person in the Trump 1.0 election strategy, but he has been completely outside of the Trump sphere for many years now. Like he is completely like outcasted from the Trump sphere and tries to continue to like hold on to like, I'm the MAGA guy.
You know, like, Well, so, and like, people do listen really to him. He has a popular show. Yeah. I mean, it's not nothing.
But he doesn't have real influence among the Trump administration anymore.
Right.
And he's somebody that is like hypercritical of everybody in the current Trump administration.
And to be fair, he has been opposed to Elon vehemently since the H-1B visa controversy, at least.
Which, and there actually has been a lot of people that have been like pretty consistent since then on their Elon skepticism. Like, I don't want it to like look like just like everybody on the right wing just was like all of a sudden turned on Elon overnight or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, there's been a lot of people have been pretty consistently since the, and also like another area that had people raising alarm bells was the Vivek Elon Doge split up too. But then everybody started hating on Vivek also because of the H-1B visa stuff.
Right. But they didn't really come around to Elon in part because he maybe played his hand better, but also
because he
stuck with
Doge.
The administration. And on the other side of this, and one of the takes that I've seen too, is that Vivek looks like he kind of got out actually at the perfect time. Like he timed his
sale. And he looks like he's going to become governor of Ohio.
Well, too. I mean, he's in a great spot too.
I think he is like 80% of the vote in the primaries right now. Wow. So it was something like that. Like he's going to be the Republican nominee for the governorship in Ohio. So we'll see him probably win the governorship, which will be interesting.
Yeah.
I also want to just play out because the internet wanted to be like, where's JD in all of this?
we need to know.
We haven't heard from JD. And hours
he's like
into
our older brother in the divorce. So like, we need to know what older brother thinks. You know?
It was funny because I think it was Autism Capital that tweeted this out, was there's only one man who can bring peace. We need a podcast. And it was just a picture of Theo Vaughn. And literally hours after this whole debacle came out, JD Vance posted a picture of him with Theo Vaughn saying, slow news days. What are we even going to talk about? He was recording with Theo Vaughn yesterday.
At the same time.
So it's just like, it is just kind of perfect. One of those things where it's like, the Republic needs saving and there's only one person who can do it. It's Theo Vaughn. It's like, yeah, so you're like a crack monkey. That's just so I'll be looking forward to that podcast. I imagine it'll be coming out in the next few days here. So,
nice.
Elon or JD is like, JD is one of these people and just like in the gamesmanship here, especially because like that novel tweet where things are kind of looking at as like kind of the Trump MAGA right versus the tech right. Like there is kind of that divide that's happening right here. And a lot of people are looking at like JD is the synthesis of those two groups because JD is Elon, Peter Thiel, right? All of those, like he is, and it was actually Donald Trump Jr. That was like the one big one that courted him. So like there is ties there. Like, and a lot of people were trying to pit, I saw a lot of narratives around it is like, J.D. Vance is going to be a vice president now that just gets none of the good jobs. He shows up at funerals and that's all he's going to do. The Trump administration is going to separate themselves. Like this was the narrative that I was seeing around like the right wing on this time. Again, I don't think that's the case.
It hasn't played out at all. And in fact, relatively, other than, you know, folks like the Halliburton guy on Bush administration, Dick Cheney, has been a relatively active VP. I mean, most VPs are much more passive and has been way more out in the media, has been way more aggressive and done more international tours and things like that to actually drive policy.
But
but
people are saying now in the aftermath of all of this, he will move back towards that role of being like a very passive VP because he just won't be given jobs because they see
he's like
hardcore. We hate Elon now. We are obsessed with Trump no matter what. They're looking at it as like J.D. Vance is the sheep in wolf's clothing on the inside because he's the Peter Thiel guy, right? Like that's the way that they're looking at it. And they're devising this like, this was all a strategy. Trump got on board Elon got on board at the convenient moment. And now he's like activating the plan. He saw something to disagree with Trump. Now he's going to tear down the Trump administration from the outside. Well, Elon becomes the next, and then they're going to try to impeach Trump so that J.D. Vance can be the new president. And like this is the type of narrative that I'm seeing thrown around.
Okay. So these are the hardcore Trump supporters, like the QAnon adjacent Trump supporters. Yes. They're like, everything's a grand plan. That's all going to come together. And it's underwater, hungry hippos.
Except the grand plan is Trump's grand plan, but this is the counter grand plan that's being made by the tech fascists, the techno fascists.
And so he's gonna counteract.
Is what they call them, the techno fascists.
And therefore he's going to counteract and he's gonna isolate out J.D. Vance. Mm-hmm. And so we'll know whether or not this is all true based upon whether or not J.D. Vance takes a back seat.
Yeah.
That might be our signal.
That's the
unless Elon comes back around and is in the room when he signs BBB. Now, one of the things I want to note too, and I actually wanted to get this on the last one. I don't think Steve Bannon is going to give Elon the credit of opposing a bill that has many things that are very important for him, right? So, like, look at the bill and what benefits Elon Musk. Tax Cuts and Jobs Act lowers corporate tax rates. All of his assets are in corporations, right? Auto loan interest payments, that's huge. You can't buy a Tesla without an auto loan unless you're a rich person, right? It's $80,000 vehicle. They have some that are a little cheaper, but even a $40,000 vehicle, most people have to take a loan out on it. No state and local AI regulations in the bill. That little rider that they put in to preempt state and local regulations on AI, he runs an AI company. You know, like there's other than he's either incredibly unprincipled and taking a stand on principle, mm-hmm. or this is kayfabe. Those are your options, right? And because there's nothing else in this bill.
Or
ketamine, right? Or he's just like, he's just a crazy, drugged out person. I just can't. And out of those options, there's probably some blending of those three things, right? There could be that their relationship is somewhat tense because of he doesn't wear a suit and he's kind of spurging out and it doesn't look good on camera and Trump's actually upset about that. It could be that, you know, there are real disagreements about spending and that this is also kayfabe, kind of blowing that up because it benefits them both to do so. They could also kept it very quiet and he could have just left and then it could have been a slow trickle out of some criticisms. He didn't have to do it this way. And I think he chose to do it this way.
It very well could be a mixture of all those. Like it could be like, I think the escalatory spiral that occurred is very kayfabe.
Right.
Of like, we're going to blow this up and get the entire world looking at this bill.
Right.
Like that type of a thing. But like, I think Elon is taking a principled stance of being like, there are problems in the bill, right?
That's right.
That is the thing is like, it's not that it's just like, it's all Fugazi or like all a sham, but like, it's like exaggerated. That's the way that you like, that's the way like to look at influencers and very influential people oftentimes is they're playing like hyperbolic personas of who they actually are. Mm-hmm. Like it's like authentic, but also not authentic.
Right.
You know what
I mean? It's a component of your personality, but it's not your actually personality, right? Because it's impossible to be eloquent while being yourself. Because when I'm alone, I'm like, I do all that stuff. But when I'm on a podcast, I talk a little different because this is actually what's interesting to listen to.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure we hit on where we're at in the Senate, too, and actually get some real policy done.
Let's close out with that.
Enough drama.
We've gone through the drama.
Because there's so many good things. There's so many delicious things in the drama. But let's get on to it. So where we're at is when it got transferred to the Senate, soon after, Rand Paul puts out a guest op-ed with actually a Cato scholar talking about why this is a problem. And he tweeted that there are at least four of us in the Senate that feel like the tax cuts are important, but the $5 trillion new debt ceiling placement is simply not possible. He can't go that way. Now, of course, that's what spiraled all of the, you know, Trump calling him out and all that kind of stuff. I consumed a bunch of what those folks have been saying, and really what I see as the core criticisms and how they have to work this out isn't necessarily something that can be solved in the bill, to be fair.
It's future stuff.
Yeah, and this is where Thomas Massie is absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. This is Lucy and the football, and she's holding out again saying, I will do something about it on spending, and this is just simply, are they going to yank that ball away again? And can you get Rand Paul and these three other senators, because they need all four, to go with you on this? And that is, one, increase the debt ceiling by $5 trillion. The overall passage of the picture that they are building is that we are going to lock in now Biden-era level spending because it's a reconciliation bill, right? And we've already passed the CR. So if they just followed my advice and put off the trade war a year and done a actual budget and an actual, like, we're going to cut spending and force a debate on that, even if it had failed and then passed a CR, like, at least then you would be able to say, here's the list of Republicans who refuse to return to COVID level spending, pre-COVID level spending. So the core demand is, of course, to return to pre-COVID level spending. And, you know, with the structural deficit we have, $1.5 trillion just doesn't do enough, mm-hmm. right? In that policy spend. And then on top of that, we're increasing defense spending with new policy while doing nothing about that. I mean, we don't need to increase defense spending. That's reality. And the budget from the president is obviously unserious about that, because the budget from the president also increases the on top of the BBB, increases deficit spending on the Pentagon by another, I think, $178 billion. So, third, it doesn't include incisions that could be available. I talked about that a little bit before. It doesn't end Obamacare, right? So by just changing Obamacare, it does save a lot of money. I'm totally understand that, but it's not really doing the thing they promised to do, which was end Obamacare, yeah. right? And so therefore, it's not doing enough in that area. And then lastly, the goal should be to do no new spending at all, or at least in its own bill, right? So if you want to do your defense bill, do that again. And like, do that in a different reconciliation bill next year. Why do you have to do it now? But of course, that is this battle between the budget hawks and the big spenders on the defense budget. And they're saying, no, you got to actually work with us, because we're the ones who are on the margin now. Now, this is the same story that keeps happening. This is loosing the football. Speaker Johnson and the majority leader in the Senate, I'm spacing his name right now. What's his name?
Thune.
Their argument is, well, we did the whip count on our heads, and our whip count on our heads says that we don't have the votes to do the conservative thing. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do the moderate thing and the big spending thing. What if we flipped that on its head? What if we gave the conservatives what they wanted for once, for just once, just try it one time, and then let the moderates kill the bill rather than, and then bring the moderate bill up. And then you can say, well, we tried that. And here's the new thing. That would be actually a media play that would allow the grassroots to hold to account these people who are actually standing in the way of the budget hawks. And that's what gives people the sense that actually Thune and actually Speaker Johnson don't actually care about this, because they're asking us to trust them, that the whip count in their head means, well, the conservatives will give in, but the moderates won't.
Well, that's kind of the thing, though, is like, I get the whip count in the head argument, because we saw in the House it only passed by one vote, right? Like, so right. If they conceded for Thomas Massey on that, who would they have lost on the other end? Like, that's the question that comes to mind there. And I feel like it would have been a lot more than one vote.
Right.
And that's where, like, the pragmatism side of the Trump argument here, I think, matters, and why, like, there is an interesting distinction, and why I feel like there's probably some unique synthesis of where this bill will start to move, mm-hmm. with that kind of aids the pragmatism side and also the ideological side of Elon. Like, I think that that's why I think that this month-long battle is going to be happening right. pretty hard right here.
So 28 Republicans voted against adding rescission to the CR mm-hmm. earlier this year. Now we have that list, mm-hmm. and that's an important list. Got to keep those people in mind for the next primaries.
Exactly.
If you're actually serious about reforming the government and spending. Now, if they can get another rescission package that actually does something, that they've said it, that wasn't the real rescission effort. That was actually a conservative force.
Multiple congressmen and multiple of the really good congressmen have said that there is a DOGE rescission package.
That's coming. What they say is coming. So if that can actually be introduced.
It's not just Speaker Johnson saying that. It's like people like Byron Donalds and stuff like that who have a good track record on mm-hmm. this stuff.
If that can be introduced when in the House, when the Senate is considering BBB, then you're actually in a position of relative leverage mm-hmm. to get conservatives cover for supporting the Build Back Better. I mean, you could reduce that deficit, that budget ceiling, the debt ceiling, without a lot of political cost to me, right? Because I don't think the budget hawks, as long as they're getting the defense spending, the budget hawks will compromise, will get that and then compromise on the additional defense spending. Because the defense spending people, they will not budge from that. And I don't mm-hmm. think they care as much about the debt ceiling, because they know how that game plays out. So that's what I anticipate happening. But I do want to note, and I think part of the backdrop here that is maybe a little undercovered, is that Senator Ron Johnson was on Tucker Carlson's show and blew up the bill substantially. And I think his picture of it was, I think, part of the backdrop that has really established this as, you know, giving the conservatives what they need to, you know, get the reforms potentially.
I'm trying to force the discussion over the real numbers. Okay. And again, $1.5 trillion in abstract seems like a lot, but we've really ramped up from 2019 to this year. That's over 10 years. That's $29 trillion of increased spending over 10 years. $29 trillion. And we're talking about cutting out 1.5 of that?
Yeah, it's a joke. It's a joke. Because people don't want to cut it out. And so I guess that's my question. You said that the problem with democracy is once the majority figures out they can just steal money, then, you know, then you're just like headed to the cliff and there's no pulling back. Are we there?
Well, again, they're not stealing it. They just don't realize that how it's financed is by printing money. And they can't afford things.
Well, if you're taking other people's money,
well, sure.
It's called theft.
Yeah, they try and tax it, but we're not taxing anywhere near enough.
Right. No, right.
So we're going to have to borrow $2.2 trillion for the next 10 years every year.
Effectively a tax because it devalues the money in your pocket. So you're basically paying $10 for a Big Mac and a Coke. So
yeah, inflation is a silent tax. It's really nasty.
Yeah, Tucker goes full libertarian there, and that was awesome. Yeah, but that's exactly, I think, what the dialogue is going to be, is how serious are we about cutting spending? And that this sets up an important, you know, discussion about that to lead into the midterms, right? Because even if conservatives have to compromise, at least now, hopefully, if Conservative Inc. is doing their job, they'll get all these, you know, defense budget hawks who refuse to actually address the defense budget to do something. But so many of them will not budge on that. And that's why you need to view our SCIF coming up. We'll be talking about one of those hawks and how they're terrible about this stuff and have continued to be terrible. And we need to do something about them if you're going to have a Republican Party that actually tackles the deficit at some point.
Well, that's kind of the thing is, like, in a lot of ways, all roads lead to, seems like the real answer is just abolishing Congress because they're the ones getting in the way in all of this all the time.
Yeah, not with you on that one, Curtis Yarvin.
There's a thing there. It's like, it's the same thing that happened in Rome. The Senate was just like overly corrupt and was constantly bloating and just stealing money out of the coffers all the time. And then you're like, oh yeah, no wonder Julius Caesar came in and was like, this shit's got to change.
Oh,
like there was a major immigration issue. Their immigration issue of the time was called the land reform issue. And it was literally the Senate taking complete control over agriculture and importing massive amounts of slave labor, stealing away Roman jobs, right? Like these were the issues that were happening at the time. And it's hard not to look at that and just be like, yeah, like you need somebody to come in and just like, hey, Senate, stop it. Yeah. Right.
Well, I mean, right? Like, it's either that or we default on the debt, which would be disastrous for the American people. And
that's the balance game that's going on in the bond market right now is like people are kind of sitting there like, well, is America going to be good on the debt or are they not going to be good on the debt? Mm-hmm. The bonds have come back down exactly as I said they would, back down to 4.3. It's actually went even further down than I thought they would. So like the market does seem to, like, there was the initial hysteria of like, oh my God, 5 to 6% bond, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like, it's all back down to 4.3 right now. Like in a week, it just went back down.
But if the bill passes, you would assume the bond markets would go back up again.
Depending on the structure of the bill in the future, right? Yeah. Like it depends on a lot of that. And then it'll depend on future stuff. Like it'll depend with the narrative. Because at the end of the day, the bond market moves based on narratives. Markets move based on narratives. And then they will come back to a real price afterwards. So like we'll see some like chaotic aspect there. And it was actually even today on Truth Social, Trump tweeted out that about the bond market today, where they were talking about refinancing, is that the necessity of refinancing the debt.
And putting pressure on the Fed to lower interest
rates. Which is exactly like, that's another one of those theatrical games to me is Trump versus Powell. Like that's another theater game of just Powell will begin to move rates probably in the coming months, but there's a lot of like precursor signaling towards that that happens in the underlying. We hate each other actually, but they don't actually. You know, they're both New York guys.
Like, yeah, but if he moves rates, but the actual natural market rate for demand for bonds is actually assuming a higher one when this bill passes, what will be the consequence of that?
Well, I think naturally what we'll end up seeing is if the Federal Reserve decreases rates, we're going to see a much more liquidity sloshing around in the economy, which will allow for the growth to happen that the Trump group is projecting in their numbers in regards to where growth is going to go. Like that'll move things towards that upper 3% range, I think, with that. And then that'll create much more confidence in the bond market of people wanting to also buy bonds. I think that there'll be a lagging factor there. Like there will be some stuff here. Like initially, if this bill gets passed, we'll probably see the bond rates get a little confused and muddy there. Mm-hmm. But then we'll end up seeing them come back down, and Bessent will be out there being the bond salesman, just auctioning off bonds as we need to refinance the debt throughout the summer. Because the summer is really the big period of where we want it to get underneath 4%.
Yeah,
that's where a lot of the short-term debt that the traitorous Janet Yellen put on us comes into fruition, is the summer. Because traitor. World Economic Forum traitor.
100%. All right. Well, thank you so much for watching Human Reaction. That is the Trump Elon drama, kayfabe drama. No, no, I'm just bummed there's no choke slams.
We'll see if my prediction is right. My prediction is July 4th, bill gets signed in the Oval Office. Congratulations, America. The big, beautiful bill, the most beautiful bill. It's beautiful. It's great. And Elon will be there standing by his side, and they'll be eating a bunch of ice cream together. And that's not part of my prediction.
But if you want to see more, we're going to be diving into Mark Levin and his neocon-ness in the skiff. It's going to be a really great time. Check us out. And if you want to become a member so you can get access to the entire backlog of all of our cool members-only episodes, all you got to do is go to humanreactionpod.com. You could buy a hat like that. You could buy a shirt like this. You can go rep our gear and help us spread the good word about resisting media misdirection.
And if you're curious about our skiff episodes, which you get as a member, we do put a few of them public every now and then for limited periods of time. So you can see the weird, wonky chaos that we get into there. I think the next public one that's going to be coming out is my Brigitte Macron thesis, which was a wild skiff episode. One of my favorite ones we've done in a while.
So go become a member, buy some stuff. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe if you're new here. And thank you so much for watching. On behalf of David Rand, Kyle Mack, this has been Human Reaction. Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.